Welcome to Season 9, Episode 22 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday, the 26th of July, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Alan, and joining me this week is Martin.
Hello.
Hello, welcome back. And Mark.
Hello.
Hello. And Laura.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good
Alan
to
and
be
Martin.
Back.
Yeah, good
excellent.
To be back.
How was your German beer extravaganza? I mean,
you mean work
conference? Yes.
I have no idea what you mean. There's no beer consumed whatsoever.
There was a tiny bit. So, Martin, where have you been?
I was at the Snappy Sprint in Heidelberg, Germany.
And the reason that you couldn't record the show was because you'd gone out for dinner, and if you came back, you couldn't have beers. That's right.
Not quite.
Not quite. I mean,
the Wi-Fi
genuinely,
was
the Wi-Fi was terrible.
Too bad for a pillow cast.
Yeah. So at some point in the week, later in the week, I uploaded the show that you recorded, and just uploading the MP3 and the OGG took 20 minutes. So that gives you some idea of how poor the Wi-Fi was.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
Yes. It was okay. It was fun. It was fun, yeah. And it was a worthwhile and productive week.
The sprint was brilliant, excellent. Yeah.
Cool. So, Alan, what have you been doing other than Germany?
Sprinting.
Sprinting.
I went on a weekend away visiting nuclear power stations.
As you do.
And other things as well. Went to an observatory, two nuclear power stations, an underground bunker, a UFO spotting site. We did like everything we could possibly jam into a couple of days.
Was this all independently organized, or was it like a package of, you know, stuff to do?
No, it was independently organized by Will Cook, who is a good friend, works at Canonical, is desktop team lead, and he organized this trip for me, him, and Stuart Langridge, and we all met up. Oh, and we also went to Arthur Dent's house from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I spotted that picture on G+. Was, yeah.
From the film.
And we went to, from the TV series, the original TV series, darling. Ah. We don't talk about the film. And the pub where Arthur Dent and Ford Prefect go and have 6 pints and some salted crisps.
Yeah, I remember that better.
Yeah, that was good. Going in there and it was just a big cheesy grin in that pub. Yes.
Did the barman sort of spot you and roll their eyes at you?
we weren't wearing dressing gowns and carrying towels or anything like that. No, and we didn't use old £5 notes to pay for our beer or anything like that. No. I will tell him that the world was ending. But he was a young guy, so I don't think he would have got it anyway. I'm not sure how many youngsters. People go into that pub and, you know, talk about Hitchhikers.
I imagine it's more than you'd expect.
well, actually,
middle-aged men in dressing gowns.
Yeah,
it's funny you should say that. We went to see the sound mirrors at Denge as well, which is something I forgot off the list. And we were like the only people at the end of this very long path to get to the Denge sound mirrors. And we thought we'd be the only nerds there. And then two more nerds turned up. out of the blue.
Amazing. Identifiable how?
Because they were there to see the sound mirrors. Like, who else would be there to see some giant concrete monstrosities in Denge? yes. I just like saying Denge.
Excellent.
Mm.
Cool.
Should we get on with it?
Let's do that.
Hello, and it's time for some news. So Microsoft has won a major privacy victory against the US government about data that it holds overseas, such as in Dublin, Ireland.
They've been in a bit of hot water recently over this, haven't they?
Mm. So the government had a warrant to get them to give them data. But they said they couldn't because it was in Dublin, and the government said, tough, that doesn't count, and now they've won.
Yeah, so this has been, because originally they were taken to court and lost, and they said, no, we're going to keep on fighting this. And then they kept on fighting it and appealed. And the appeal was, well, I'm not sure if the appeal was upheld or the original ruling was overturned. I don't know exactly how the legalese works. But basically now they don't have to give the data of their customers if it's not held within the US, if they've only got a US warrant for it.
Yeah. So I'll give it a year from now and it'll be overturned. But, you know.
Yeah. It's good to know that the US can't just issue a warrant for anything they want anywhere in the world.
Is there some method by which they could contact the Irish government and try and subpoena the data that way via some relationship they may have with Ireland and get the data that way? I wonder. I'm just wondering if
if they did that, then Microsoft might say, well, we're not going to do business in Ireland anymore, and Ireland wouldn't want that.
This is true.
True. I was just trying to think what the US government wouldn't like drop this now. Surely they're going to look for other ways in which they can get their hands on data for whatever purposes they claim it's for, whether it's for, you know, anti-terrorism or, you know, whatever that they claim it's for. It just strikes me that they're likely to want to try other means to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
So this probably isn't the end of that story, I would imagine.
In other Microsoft news, Microsoft have been ordered to fix excessively intrusive and insecure Windows 10. A French regulator who said that Windows 10 collects excessive amounts of personal data and ships it illegally out of the EU and has bad security. So basically what lots of people have been saying all along.
What's it do that it didn't used to do in previous Windows?
It basically collects data about everything you do unless you tell it not to.
Like what kind of things?
I think it's down to the level of like what files you access on your hard disk.
It's pretty invasive. And it's sort of juxtaposed by the previous article where, they've had a privacy win.
Yes. So they don't want to give your data to the government, but they do want to collect it all in the first place. So, you know, it's kind of like the whole data retention thing with ISPs. The government doesn't want, it wants your data to be secure, but it doesn't want it to be so secure it doesn't want people to collect it all.
So is this under the auspices of making your user experience better? Like, you know, you open in the same way that on an Android device, you open certain features on the device and it knows somehow that you're probably going to be getting on a certain flight on a certain day. And it says, you know, you need to start rushing to the airport because you're going to miss your flight. And that's because it's read data about, you know, emails you've received from travel providers and the fact that you've done Google searches for flight numbers and things like that, that it correlates those things together and says, look, he's going to get on that flight. Let's give him some help. So those kind of features that some people find most welcome, like normals who aren't particularly fussed about privacy, are quite appreciate. Is that how this is sold on the desktop? You're going to, you know, these wonderful features that will come later, maybe.
I don't know how it's sold, actually. I've not seen it.
I've never used Windows
10. In any case, from Microsoft's point of view, data about its users is intrinsically valuable. So
thing about shipping it illegally out of the EU, isn't that just a no-brainer that they're not meant to ship? That's quite a lot of stuff you're not allowed to ship out of the EU.
I guess so. I mean, there's... Sorry, I've got a dog barking outside.
Get you.
Yes. Sorry, I've lost my track now. Carry on.
When I read this article, I think there was something in there that Microsoft have been given 3 months to comply, and I'm not sure if that's comply as in change the behaviour of Windows 10 or just file a response to this legal action. So,
or just not move the data out of the EU, keep it in the EU, and then aggregate, anonymise, send it out of the EU.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are ways they've got of getting this data out in a, you know, aggregate.
They do have a nice Dublin data centre, which they're keen on.
Yeah, apparently I've heard about this quite recently. In good news, the source code for the Apollo 11 guidance system that took the US to the moon in 1969 has been uploaded to GitHub.
Yay.
So awesome. All those people who want to recreate the Apollo 11 system and, well, probably won't get as far as the moon. No. The code's written in assembler. It was originally digitized in 2009 by typing the code in by hand from hard copies in a museum at MIT. Yeah. And you can, you know, you can go and read the code, and there's even a virtual Apollo kind of simulator software, virtual AGC software that you can use to execute this code that's been typed in. And I found it quite amusing that it, you know, it talks about this is a project that provides a virtual machine to simulate the Apollo guidance computer and the other components that made up the computers that took them to the moon. But then after that, it says, what this project is not for. Virtual AGC is not a flight simulator, nor a lunar lander simulator, nor even a behavioral simulation of the Apollo lunar man. Yes. So in other words, if you expect a realistic LM control panel to suddenly appear on your computer screen, you will be disappointed.
It's basically a copy of the code that's in that photograph of Margaret Thingy, yeah. who was the director of software development for NASA.
Oh, the big stack of paperwork.
Yeah, the big stack as tall as her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Margaret Hamilton was only 5 foot nothing, though, so it's still a tall stack. Still quite a
lot.
Stack.
It's still a lot of paper.
Yeah.
And there's some quite good comments in the code.
Yes.
Obviously, software development hasn't changed that much.
There's some quite scary comments in there as well. There are some comments that are sort of... are suggesting that they hope this...
Yeah, there's, one, yeah, there's a line that says, temporary, I hope.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And then there have been some modern issues raised on GitHub, which are also quite amusing.
Yeah, some like improving the algorithms for calculating the guidance and so on.
Wow. Thinking of that and thinking back to my recent trip around a couple of nuclear power stations where they impressed upon us the safety and the controls and the rigor among all the software.
It's all written like that.
Yep. Almost certainly, yes.
Yeah.
It all contains comments like, this should never happen.
Yes.
So next up, we have the news from Verizon that they are acquiring Yahoo for $4.8 billion.
Wow.
Apparently, Microsoft have previously offered $44.6 billion for the company.
So
now, but this isn't quite a fair comparison because this is selling, they're going to be buying some of Yahoo's core assets in air quotes, and it isn't quite clear what core assets mean exactly. But there is also, what it absolutely doesn't include is Alibaba and also some other thing I've forgotten. But
Flickr?
No. I think it might be their property or something. But Yahoo are still going to be holding on to $40 billion worth of assets at the end of this. So,
so that's where that other $40 billion went.
So there's sort of nearly $5 billion for purchasing sort of online assets, and Yahoo have got some other stuff that they will keep at the end of this.
Right.
So Yahoo will still exist in its own right?
Well, not in any meaningful way that people know Yahoo for.
Yeah. So it'll be a holding company.
It looks like it. And this is sort of, the indications are that maybe Marissa Mayer will be standing down or asked to leave or whatever. But she'll be taking $55 million with her as part of her severance package. So
I'll pour her.
Could be worse. So the only thing is that Mozilla have got an advertising agreement with Yahoo to the tune of about $300 million a year, which is... got sort of a perpetuity to it, or not perpetuity, but it's good for another 2 years, and it will be interesting to see which bit of Yahoo is responsible for ponying up that $300 million to Mozilla, and if it continues to get paid or not.
You would expect them, you'd expect them to honor their existing contracts, but
really, Verizon, you'd expect Verizon to honor that agreement.
True. Yeah, fair point.
And the EU-funded FOSSA project will audit the security of KeePass and Apache HTTP server. And I didn't quite follow how this came about, but somebody proposed that open source software be audited for security, and users of some description were asked to vote on the software projects, and these were the two projects that came up top.
I think at least one of the people involved is from the Pirate Party in the EU Parliament, and they basically proposed this to the EU Commission as part of its general project, which it funds. They basically put open a poll for people to say which projects they thought needed auditing and should be done. So as part of this, I think it's something like €1 million worth of funding for the project, and they're going to get a consultant in as part of it to do the auditing, which will go on until October, I think.
Do you know what the kind of obviously, those two pieces of software will be audited.
Yeah.
But is the idea that they'd then go on and audit other software and have like a set of full set of software that is audited?
Well, there's a comment on the blog post that says that there's sort of a reasonable chance that they'll get further funding to continue the project on for another couple of years.
Right.
It's interesting the when you look at the results of the vote for, you know, what was selected to be analysed. KeePass was, you know, fairly significant, 23% of the vote, and Apache also fairly significant, 18% of the vote. But then there are other interesting ones like VLC and Linux. It says Linux selected system library. I guess that means not the entire Linux kernel, but some bits of it. But then other things like MySQL 7-zip, which is a bizarre one.
Yeah.
I guess for creating encrypted zip files or whatever. Git, libc, Bouncy Castle. What on earth
is that?
Bouncy Castle.
Sounds fun.
Tomcat, SSL, and a few others. But most of those were like in the single digit percentages. So it was pretty significant. I don't know how KeePass. I guess there's a thing people really want to have secure passwords, and they want to be confident that the thing they're putting their passwords in is as secure as it can be. Yeah. And with Apache being a very popular web server,
maybe they've just got good communities and they managed to rally enough people to go and vote.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest that, but that's possible. Yeah,
this is great though, because we've got the Linux Foundation Core Platform Initiative, or whatever it's called, the bits that they sponsor. We've had a couple of times in the news recently talking about Mozilla's initiative, where they're sponsoring projects to invest and improve their security, and now we've got this as well. So more of this is terrific. It's great for open source and great for, you know, the security and user privacy.
Moving on, Mark, what's next?
Finally, the Japanese technology company SoftBank has made an offer to buy UK-based ARM. So this is ARM of ARM processor fame, who design the chips that we have in all of our smartphones and pretty much all of our embedded devices.
Raspberry and Pis
some
and
servers, Raspberry Pis and things.
Phones.
Phones, some routers, some servers even, and all sorts of stuff.
Really quite a lot, isn't it?
It's a phenomenal amount of money they're paying for ARM.
Yeah.
Really, when you think how much ARM doesn't turn over a particularly huge amount of money. And so it's quite a vast amount of money that they've paid for it. And talking about hiring significantly more engineers to work at the company, what they're going to focus on, I don't understand. I don't know.
I read somewhere that ARM itself doesn't do manufacturing anyway. It's the design side, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. They just license like a very tiny amount per unit cost that they license to the manufacturers of the chips. But other companies do design as well. So some of those companies like Samsung and Qualcomm have their own designs, but some of them they license from ARM Holdings. ARM doesn't make a terrific amount of money out of that. I mean, it's you know, a vast number of devices that per unit cost, but they don't actually make that much out of it. So yeah, maybe that this will make them grow and become bigger. Better.
I guess it's already a very recognised sort of a name in the technology world. So I guess that's a good thing for them to be getting out of it.
Mm.
We'll see how it goes.
Yep,
that's all. I think that's all the news we've got time for. And now it's time for the community news and events. First up, we've got improved Unity desktop graphics performance on the way for low graphics mode.
Yeah, this has been called for a while, that Unity can be a bit heavy, specifically Unity and Compiz can be a bit heavy, especially in either virtualized environments like inside VirtualBox or KVM or something like that. So it can feel quite sluggish. Or when you're doing remote desktop sessions like VNC or that other one that Martin mentions a lot.
X2Go.
That's the one. Under those, like Unity isn't great in those environments. So they've made some improvements to speed it up so it can run in a kind of low effects mode, so it doesn't have so many transparent effects and the animations are cut and things like that to make it faster in those environments.
I've seen the advantage of this already. I was tinkering with the Raspberry Pi 2 and 3 images that I make from time to time, and I have got Unity 7 working on it, and with these changes it makes quite a considerable difference on the Pi 3. It's great.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Right.
That's exactly what it was designed to
exactly.
do.
It does exactly what it's designed to do, yeah.
Brilliant. What's next?
The Ubuntu forums have been hacked.
Oh, noes.
Oh, what happened?
2 million usernames have been stolen.
Yeah.
But not passwords.
There was I think, as I understand it, that someone approached someone in the forums admins and said they've got access to some of the data. And, that set off alarm bells, of course. And so the forums were shut down and the servers were scrubbed and reinstated and security audit done. And the holes that were found were closed, or hole that was found was closed. And it's all back online. It's unfortunate. It's sad to see that, a non-updated piece of software results in people getting access to a whole load of data.
And did passwords go?
There has been progress in the Ubuntu Ubuntu for phones port to the Fairphone 2. So the Fairphone is like designed to be a modular, repairable, ideally made with low conflict materials, and generally a nice phone to have from an ethical point of view. And Ubuntu is supposed to be a nice operating system to have from an ethical point of view. So ideally, a marriage made in heaven, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a community-maintained port. Fairphone provided a couple of devices for community people to work on. So that's cool.
Excellent.
Unity Desktop now runs on Windows 10.
No what? Way!
Which sounds weird.
Yeah. This is quite clever. The bash on Windows thing that we talked about a little while ago, where you can run, a shell on Windows 10.
Oh, yes.
If you press a certain set of buttons and dials and flick switches and stuff on Windows 10, you can make it install crazy crack on your system. And so someone's managed to get Unity running inside that. So you can have Unity on your Windows 10 system if you were that weirdly inclined.
So I think this works by you have a separate, an X server for Windows installed separately, and then you tell Unity to use that as its X display, and then you launch it and it appears.
Hmm. I wonder what the performance is like. I've not tried it myself.
I haven't had the opportunity to try Bash on Windows yet.
No, me neither. I would imagine those low graphics mode things we mentioned earlier would benefit this as well.
Significantly, I should think, yeah.
Yeah. Next up, Mozilla Thunderbird 45 finally lands in the main Ubuntu Linux repositories.
Oh, I fist punched when I air punched when I saw this. This is such good news. This is so great. Oh, yeah, I use Thunderbird all day long at work, and I did the updates, and so much better.
What's great about Thunderbird 45?
Well, the main thing that I was interested in is it's quicker. That's really, moving between large folders is much faster than it used to be. That's the number one thing I've noticed. And the icons have changed, which I'm not particularly a fan of. They're all monochrome, sort of Mac OS 10-ish sort of icons now. But so that I don't really care for, but the main thing is it runs faster.
Sweet. Good to hear. In other new software... that's actually old software. Skype have announced a brand new Linux client now in alpha.
Woohoo!
Based on Electron. It's got instant messaging, one-to-one voice calls and group voice calls. 64-bit only, no video calls yet and no desktop sharing yet. And they plan to do a new release every 2 weeks.
Which they have, because since this was first announced, we've already had our first two-week update. Which,
oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, so this will be interesting. So probably by the time you're listening to this, there may even be another one, or maybe in a week or something.
So this is completely different to the original Skype. Nothing like the original peer-to-peer Skype that was made by... Was it
Skype?
The people from Skype were from somewhere else.
They were from Skype, weren't they, originally?
No. The Skype people... Someone is shouting at their podcatcher right now that I am a clueless idiot for not knowing where they came from. They came from some peer-to-peer file-sharing platform, and then they made Skype.
Yeah, yeah,
I can't remember who they are. And then Microsoft bought them, and then Microsoft threw away the peer-to-peer Skype, and now they've made their own Skype, which is completely different.
Oh, Kazaa.
Kazaa, that's the one.
Oh, really? I didn't realise that it was the people behind that.
Yes.
So, all of you freedom-loving open-source users will be pleased to hear there is an alternative to Skype that you could use if you're not interested in this proprietary nonsense. There's a piece of software called Ring, which is free software for universal communication, which respects your freedoms and privacies. You can find out more about that project from ring.cx.
I had a quick install.
Play. Yeah, it's quite nice. It needs a snap. That's my first thought.
Is it easier than Mumble?
Different to Mumble. It's more like traditional Skype. You know, you have a list of contacts and stuff. Yeah.
Right. You don't have to be running a server to talk to someone else.
No,
it looks pretty good. I have it installed. I installed it when I first heard about it, and then never used it. I guess it's the network effect. I don't know anyone else who has it. Now it's getting a bit more popular. Maybe
we should give it a test. We should give it a test, see if it solves a problem for us. Or not solves a problem,
absolutely.
But it improves.
Yes.
A Chinese consortium has bought Opera Browser for $600 million.
Yes. Who is this Chinese consortium, and why are they buying a browser that nobody uses?
Because it's based on the same technology that Chrome uses, which means they can have a browser that's modern and works, and they don't have to feed the Google juice.
And also, it's used a lot on mobile devices and things like that.
This is also true.
Because they have Opera Mini, and they have things where it goes through like a proxy server, which compresses everything and strips out stuff that delete your data.
And strips out stuff about Tiananmen Square and...
Yeah, I was going to say, feeds the Chinese government juice, yeah.
Right. Go on.
Do you think we get downloaded in China?
Oh,
we'll have to check the stats and find out.
I'll tell you. Yeah, okay. I'll look into that.
The only time that I've ever used Opera was on a Palm mobile device. And it didn't work then. Oh, I think actually the browser on the Wii... Opera. Well.
Yeah, so it's things like that where they get, I think, where they get a lot of their revenue from is doing deals with people making devices that want an embedded browser, and then they'll make a browser for them.
Right, gotcha.
I used to use it on Android for a short time.
I think our friend of the show, Mr. Langridge, is a fan of Opera, but now he's moved on to Vivaldi, the other one. So, speaking of which, you can now watch Netflix in Vivaldi.
Hooray.
Mr. Language, cheers!
So, yes, somebody's written a script which basically pulls out the DRM decodery bit from Chrome and makes it available for Vivaldi web browser. And I think the same trick also means that you can now watch Netflix using Chromium and Opera.
Yes. I think this already there was already something to do this for Chromium.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, that's cool.
I'm sure I remember seeing that.
Mm. And some enterprising user on the forums of a distribution that I might be involved in has also done the same thing, but enabled Chromium on the Raspberry Pi to work with Netflix. So you can now watch Netflix on the Raspberry Pi 3 using Chromium.
Wow, okay. That sounds bizarre and complicated. Because I'd presume that this would be a X86 specific thing.
Well, yeah, no, what they've done is they take the plugin, because there are some Chromebooks that are ARM-based, so they take right. the equivalent plugin out of an ARM-based image.
Clever.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. So how do the software licenses apply in this case?
We just pretend we didn't read those.
Life oh, okay. finds a way. Should we move on to the events?
Let's do.
Let's. First up, it's FOSS Talk Live.
What's that?
It's a free evening of live Linux podcasts featuring Linux Voice, Linux Luddites, and us.
Yes!
And it's coming up very soon indeed.
So soon that we're going for Kurita Planet.
Yes. So by the time you hear this, it will be just over a week away. It's on Saturday, the 6th of August. It's at King's Cross in London, and you can go to fosstalk.com.
Next up, it's Fedora Flock. It's an annual conference where Fedora contributors can come together, discuss new ideas, and work on making those ideas a reality. It's taking place in Krakow, Poland from the 2nd to the 5th of August. You can find out more at flock.fedora.org.
Excellent.
And on the 2nd to the 11th of September is Wuthering Bytes, a week-long festival of technology in the heart of the Pennines. And you have to go just because of the name.
Where is it?
The name?
Wuthering Bytes. It's at Hebden Bridge in West Yorkshire, which I think is probably close to Haworth.
Right. Hence the and it's reference. A week-long event, isn't it?
Google it.
Yeah, it's a nice-looking location as well. I've seen them tweeting photos of it last year. It looks very nice. And the final event is UbuCon Europe, the very first European Ubuntu conference announced for November at Unperfect House in Essen in Germany from 18th to the 20th of November 2016. You can find out more at ubucon.org.
Has anyone checked what Unperfect House actually means? Because I'm curious.
Yeah, Martin's been there.
It's the Imperfect House.
Is it literally that?
Yeah.
Excellent. That's a cool name.
It's a cool place as well. You should look it up on the interwebs. It's really, really amazing.
And that's all the community news and events for this week.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@UbuntuPodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/UbuntuPodcast. Or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
That's all for episode 22. We'll be back next week when we'll be discussing more news and more community news and events. If you have any events, let us know and we'll read them out on the show.
And if you do send us feedback, you know how I say please no essays, please no essays. And don't just write an essay. Don't just write an essay and then say, oops, was this an essay?
We do read them though, to
we
be
do,
fair,
but it also takes us forever to edit them.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And stop.